Hey there, welcome to another episode of the Envision Podcast. My name is Karthik and I will be your host for today's episode. On this podcast, we bring together people who have a positive impact on the blind and visually impaired community from across the world and share those stories with you. Today on our podcast, we have Christine Ha, the winner of season 3 of MasterChef US. She was the first Asian winner of the show, and more importantly, she was the first visually impaired person to win it as well. She's not just known for winning MasterChef, but she's also runs this awesome Vietnamese restaurant called The Blind Goat, has published a cookbook and won the Helen Keller Personal Achievement Award as well. And today, we're going to be talking to her about her story. Welcome, Christine. It's a great pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So we usually start off this podcast by asking our guests about their early years. So I want to ask you, what were your early years like and what events or who were the biggest influences in your life and how did that shape you into being the person you are today?
Well, I was born in Southern California in Los Angeles. My parents came to the US a few years before that from Vietnam. They were refugees who left Saigon right before the city fell after the Vietnam War. And, you know, I grew up mostly in Houston. My father's work took him to Houston. So I would say I'm pretty much a Texas girl. Raised in Houston, I was an only child for most of my life. I went to college to get a degree in business at University of Texas at Austin. And then that was around the time when my vision started decreasing. And it turned out that I was diagnosed with a condition called neuromyelitis optica, or NMO. It's similar to multiple sclerosis, where your immune system attacks your neurological system. So it affected mostly my optic nerves and my spinal cord. And I wasn't really able to recover well from the optic nerve inflammation, but I did from the spinal cord attack. So my vision gradually decreased in my 20s. But, you know, I did start teaching myself how to cook when I was in college. And I did so because I really missed my mom's cooking. And she actually passed away when I was younger at 14, and she never taught me how to cook, didn't leave any recipes behind. So because I missed a lot of the foods that she used to cook when I was younger, I decided to teach myself in college. And so my love for cooking kind of grew at the same time that I was losing my vision, and I had to often reteach myself how to work the stove, work a knife, how to adapt a kitchen so that I could still use it as someone with a vision impairment. But that's really kind of, you know, how I grew up and what my young adult and childhood lives were like.
Interesting. So I've heard in a lot of places that you never really intended to become a chef, and cooking was not something that was on your radar until your mom passed away. And eventually, you know, like you mentioned, it started to become a passion of yours. Is that the right way to put it?
Yes, that is very correct. So I didn't know that I loved cooking until I started teaching myself to do it. And what made me really enjoy it was the ability to make a meal and take, you know, raw ingredients, do apply heat to it, do different techniques, make a meal, and then feed other people. And the joy that I was able to bring to other people through my creations is what made me start to love cooking more and more. And so for me, cooking was really just a hobby, and I was just a voracious learner. I read all the cookbooks, recipes, read about different cooking techniques. I'd never intended to go into the culinary industry. You know, my undergraduate degree, like I said, was in business. After my I started losing my vision and my health kind of took a turn for the worse, I took time off the corporate world, and I had to go through a lot of physical rehabilitation to try to, you know, after some bouts of paralysis from the NMO, like I had to relearn how to use my hands, my legs. And then with the vision loss, I had to go through orientation mobility training, learn how to use a cane, adapt to life with vision loss, learn to read Braille. I decided to do a complete career switch, and I went back to school to get a master's in creative writing. So, you know, I went from business to something in the arts, and then I just continued cooking, like I said, as a hobby. And it really wasn't until I decided to audition for MasterChef, the television show that is for all amateur home cooks with Gordon Ramsay that kind of really launched my culinary career. And so it was not necessarily by choice, but it was just, cooking was just a hobby of mine that I really enjoyed doing. And then because I sort of leapt into the limelight because of the show, that's when opportunities presented themselves in order for me to move into the culinary industry.
Yeah. And just to go back a little bit, you know, when you first started to learn cooking, and this might be something that, you know, if you cited, you know, listeners of the podcast might be really interested in this, like, you know, how did you really adapt to cooking without vision, right? I'm guessing because for someone like me, who is a very, very average cook, I you know, having vision itself makes it really hard for me to cook. And I'm sure that, you know, when you first started out, it might have been a challenge. And it would be really interesting know for some of our listeners as to, you know, how did you really adapt to cooking when you first started to lose vision, you know?
Yeah, there's an agency in my state of Texas that actually helps people who lose their vision to rehabilitate and regain independent living skills. So, you know, I was taught small tricks here and there, but I think really what helped me adapt was kind of the gumption to just be fearless and try to do things my own way, regardless of the vision loss. And so I would just keep experimenting. You know, I did adapt my kitchen a little bit. Mostly there's some tactile bump dot stickers on my stove or certain appliances that have flat touchscreen control panels. So, you know, those things are hard for someone with a vision impairment to use because we need that tactile feedback. But otherwise, like I would just say I organize my kitchen in such a way where I know exactly where everything is. I use an app on my smartphone that lists out all of the ingredients I have in my fridge, my freezer, my pantry. And then I use the screen reader that's built into my smartphone to scroll through the list. And so I know everything that's in my kitchen and I can meal plan accordingly. My spice drawer is all alphabetized. I would say eventually my adaptation key was just about organizing my kitchen and teaching people who also cook in my kitchen that everything has its place and needs to be returned to exactly where it was so that I can find it when I cook.
Really interesting. And, you know, listening to your story so far, it sounds to me, you know, a simple analogy comes to mind where, you know, you have like a person who likes to run, but then eventually they, you know, go ahead and participate in something like the Olympics and end up winning. And that's, to me, is sort of the equivalent story of yours, right? Where you didn't really have this intense passion to cook from a very early age. Because I also listened to a few other people who participated in shows like MasterChef, and I can see that, you know, cooking has been something that they've been doing since a very, very early age. And for you to have done that and gone all the way to win this competition, what was that journey like? You know, could you talk to us a little bit about, you know, what went through your mind when you said, okay, I want to first apply to be part of the show, and then how the whole journey was throughout the show, eventually to end up, you know, and ending up winning the show in a way, right?
Well, I was really encouraged to audition for the show by my family and my friends. I, you know, hadn't heard of Gordon Ramsay, but I didn't watch television. I was quite busy with school at the time. And I found out that there were auditions for MasterChef coming to a city near where I lived. And, you know, my husband and my friends, they all, you know, I cook for them on their birthdays. And, you know, they say I'm one of the best cooks they know in spite of my vision impairment. And so when there was the opportunity to audition, they all encouraged me to just try out because they felt like America needed to know that someone with a vision impairment can still put together a really good meal. For me, I didn't go and audition thinking that I would make it far. Like I said, I was in grad school at the time for creative writing. And as an artist, you try to experience as much of life as you can in order to feed your creativity. So I really went with the idea of thinking that I would gain some insight or have some ideas of some stories or essays to write about. So I kind of went for a different reason. I was just like, oh, I just want to experience it and see you know, what I get out of it, and it'd be an interesting story to tell. So that's kind of my mindset when I went to audition. And then I just, you know, as I continued to get through all the challenges and make it and stayed in the competition, then the competitive side of me really came out, and I was like, okay, I'm getting closer and closer to the end, and I really want to win this thing. So my mindset did change as the challenges went on, and I, you know, I felt like the title of then the victory were becoming closer and closer. But, you know, it was a process where I felt like not only did I learn a lot about cooking, I learned a lot about myself and how I operate. I learned that I should trust my instincts and my intuition much more than I used to. And I think that that's really kind of what helped me succeed in the competition, was when I shed the idea of like doubting myself or second guessing what I was serving on the plate to the judges. And when I started really just cooking the foods that I love to eat and feed my friends, that's when I began to really thrive in the competition.
Interesting, you know, and now when I listen to your story, it does seem like, you know, writer's block was the reason you went in and eventually you ended up winning the show. But it's, and when I was also telling my teammates about, you know, the fact that I was going to talk to you, one of the questions they asked, and on a lighter note, you know, was is Gordon Ramsay really Gordon Ramsay in real life too, you know, because they see this personality and then like, oh, they want to really know, okay, for someone who's been so intimate with the show and who's been part of it, they want to know, is he really like that, you know, like how he is in the show? But yeah.
I mean, he really is like that. I think when the cameras aren't rolling, he says even more outrageous things, but I think on MasterChef, he knows that we're all just home cooks. We have not had formal culinary training. So on that show, he's more of a mentor to us. I think he judges his contestants differently on other shows. For example, in Hell's Kitchen, you know, a lot of those contestants, they are professional chefs. So he holds them to a different standard. But on MasterChef, he's more of a mentor, but he will always be honest and tell us if our food is good or not good. And that really is Gordon.
Interesting. Yeah. And you know, I really also liked the story a lot, and the fact that it didn't really stop at, you know, the MasterChef, right? I look at it as a sort of a milestone in your life, not really as the destination. And you eventually opened up a restaurant called The Blind Goat. Could you talk to us a little bit about that? It's a really interesting name. And, you know, I was going through your menu today. I was just trying to see what kind of food you guys cook. But can you talk to us a little bit about this journey of becoming an entrepreneur and a professional chef after you have, you know, won this title, and what was life like after that when you decided to start your own restaurant?
Yeah, so after winning MasterChef, my life really just turned upside down and changed completely. I categorize myself as an introvert, and I'm, you know, pretty, I like to keep being anonymous, but then my life kind of just really changed after that. So it was a very strange feeling to be recognized walking down the street or at the store. You know, but part of the prize of winning MasterChef was being able to write a cookbook. And that was actually the prize that I cherished the most, because, you know, like I said, I came from a writing background. So this was my chance to exercise the skill of writing, but also write about something I really loved, which was food and cooking. And so I wrote the cookbook the year after, and it was published, and then it became a New York Times bestseller, which was another dream come true, not only winning MasterChef, but then having something I wrote be on the New York Times bestseller list. You know, so then I continued to think about opening a restaurant, but it really didn't feel like the right time. I knew that just because I could cook really well for, you know, a party of four or 20 people didn't necessarily mean that I could run a commercial kitchen, because owning a restaurant and running a restaurant is very, very different from being able to cook well in your own home kitchen. So the opportunities that kind of presented itself at that time didn't really feel right in my gut. And like I said, Karthik, like what I learned on MasterChef, if anything, was to learn to trust my gut and my intuition more. And so these, you know, at this time, there were some opportunities to open a restaurant or to partner with other people, but I didn't feel like I had learned enough at that time about the industry to really, so I didn't want to rush anything. I'm a very methodical, careful planner. So I continue to just you know, at the time, like do a lot of events, different cooking demonstrations. I did a television show called Four Senses in Canada that helped guide novice cooks and visually impaired cooks how to create meals in the kitchen. I continued doing those sorts of things. And then it wasn't until about 7 years after I'd won MasterChef that the opportunity came for me to open a small station inside a brand new food hall in Houston. And so at that point, I figured, okay, I don't have to build out an entire building in a brand new kitchen in a large restaurant, which seemed more manageable. So now felt like the right time to dabble in the restaurant industry and learn what it's like to start a business, open a restaurant, and then see how it goes. So that's how the Blind Goat came about. I named it the Blind Goat because I'm known as the blind cook or the blind chef. And then goat is actually my the year I was born. So that's my Eastern zodiac sign. I was born the year of the goat. So we thought it was kind of a fun name because it also reflects the whimsy of what the restaurant's supposed to be. So I describe the Blind Goat as a modern Vietnamese gastropub. So what I like to do there is take comfort food and street foods of Vietnam and kind of put my own personal twist on it. And so that's how the Blind Goat was born. And then, you know, a year later during the pandemic, I opened up my second restaurant called Xin Jiao, which means hello in Vietnamese. And that's, I describe as a modern Vietnamese restaurant where we, you know, I partnered with another local Vietnamese American chef in Houston named Tony Nguyen. And together our vision for what it means to take Vietnamese food and to the next level with our generation. We do a lot of regional and local ingredients and techniques and infuse it into our Vietnamese heritage. So for example, you know, we live in Texas where we're really known for barbecued beef. And so we smoke our own beef ribs in the restaurant, and then we use it in a lot of Vietnamese dishes, or we smoke duck, or we use like the Gulf Coast seafood and add that to our Vietnamese dishes on the menu. So yeah, now I'm running two restaurants in addition to some other stuff. So pretty exciting. And it's interesting to see my journey kind of take place over the years.
Yeah. And, you know, I do have to say that when I was reading your story, what struck me the most was you opened a second restaurant in the middle of a global pandemic, right? And that was that I really wanted to ask you about it. Like, you know, we've seen I've spoken to a few people whose lives were sort of directly, you know, who were in the service industry in the past and whose lives were directly affected by COVID. And I wanted to understand, as a professional chef, as a person who owns these restaurants, you know, what sort of prompted you to take the step of opening a second restaurant during a pandemic? And how has life actually changed for you as a professional chef during the pandemic? Like, how are you putting yourself out there still and still creating dishes and, you know, cooking and, you know, stuff for people and making them happy during the pandemic? You know, maybe a few people listening to this might find, you know, innovative ways to cope with the pandemic itself.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the reason we opened Xin Jiao was we actually we planned to open it much earlier, and we signed the lease before the pandemic happened. So because we'd already locked ourselves into the space and the business, then the pandemic started. It delayed a lot of stuff. We were still kind of renovating the building and, you know, adding some equipment. But because we'd already signed the lease, we started owing rent to our landlord. So we were basically piling up some debt. And then, you know, we were the partners and I were talking about, you know, how we should open, you know, with the same menu that we planned, with the same idea, the same vision, or we were really kicking around different ideas, like what would work during the pandemic. But we knew that regardless, we had to get the doors open because, really, it was just, you know, nothing that glamorous, but really it was just because we had to pay down our debt. But also, I think everyone's lives all over the world changed a lot because of this pandemic. And I think what people miss is a sense of normalcy. And for Americans, a sense of normalcy is very much tied into the idea or the experience of going out to dine with friends and family. People, you know, Houston is such a huge restaurant town. People love going out to eat and to drink. And people miss that. So we had to think like what will work. So, the Blind Goat was already open at the time. We quickly pivoted to doing delivery and curbside pickup for takeout. Xinjiao, we had some time to think about it as we were renovating the building and getting the place ready for business. So we eventually our state did allow opening at a limited capacity and to do it as safely as possible. And we knew too that there were a lot of people in the service industry who were looking for jobs. So it was about employing people and providing jobs and the economics of that, as well as, taking care of our debt. And then also most of all, providing a sense of normalcy and providing that what people miss, which is food. So, it wasn't necessarily that we were set on choosing to open during the pandemic, but it was sort of, I felt like it was a sense of obligation in a certain way. But I feel like with the pandemic and certain circumstances in life, it's never going to pan out the way you expect, right? Like losing my mom when I was young, or getting diagnosed with NMO, or losing my vision, or going on MasterChef, or dealing with this pandemic. Life will always throw things at you that you don't expect, and you have to figure out what to do or what's the next step, regardless of what happens. And so what I've learned all these years as an entrepreneur, especially, is you have to be very quick to adapt, or else you become obsolete. And I think that's the biggest lesson that I've learned through all this, and especially with the pandemic, is yes, it really sucks, on so many levels. And everyone I know has experienced a lot of stress. People have gotten sick. People have passed away. People have lost jobs, lost houses. It's a huge devastation to this whole world. But I think, if you are still around and have the fortune of being able to build something or contribute to the world and make it a better place in spite of what's happening, then I think it's your social responsibility to do so. And so for me, it's really about, I still have my health, fortunately. So I've just been trying to adapt both my restaurants and how we do things so that we can still retain some sort of experiences that we've had from before, enjoyable experiences, because I think right now the world really needs a sense of joy and hope. And that's what I feel like restaurants provide, is that experience of getting together and, feeling happy over a shared meal. And that really provides hope for people, I think, for the future. For me, myself, like, it was a very difficult year. Not only is it that I had to run to restaurants, which we all know restaurants were hit very hard during the pandemic, such a year, but also I have to worry about my own health, because for my NMO, twice a year I do an immunotherapy infusion that really depletes my immune system. And so for me, I can get sick very easily. So it was a constant worry as well. Like, how do I run to restaurants, but also maintain my health? And so that was a constant source of stress as well for both myself and my husband and throughout this past year.
Yeah. And what I found very nice was, amidst all of this, you still found time to organize a fundraiser and give your husband a haircut, which he seemed very, very happy about in that video. Yeah, I wouldn't trust my wife with my hair, but I think he did, and he seemed happy with it. Could you talk to us a little bit about that process of, that whole fundraiser? Because I felt, it was really nice of you to find ways to give back amidst all this other stuff that you were doing. So talk to us a bit about that whole process, right?
Yeah, I think, I feel like if you are given certain gifts in life or talents or blessings in life, it's your social responsibility to pay it forward or give back. So, it was kind of a win-win for everybody. Like, I mean, John hadn't had a haircut in so long because we've been on lockdown in our house. He was dying to get his hair cut. I had said, oh, I'll give you a haircut, no problem. And we'd always laugh about it. And we thought, well, that would probably be pretty entertaining. And because I have a large following on social media, you know, I thought maybe I should use this platform for the good. So we decided, why not broadcast this haircut, myself being blind and giving my husband his first haircut since the quarantine, and using it to raise money for a good cause, which was the Houston Food Bank, because there were a lot of people who were going hungry in Houston at the time because they'd lost jobs or their kids weren't in school and getting fed. So we decided to, you know, we thought it was a win-win for everybody. John got his haircut. We got a lot of good laughs out of it. It was a fun experience. People were entertained at home while they were on lockdown, because we all know that without the internet during this lockdown, it would have been much more boring. And then people, you know, donated money, and then we were able to donate to the Houston Food Bank.
Nice. So, you know, this is a question that I ask all our guests at the very end of the show. It's always about it's about asking them what their guiding principle in life is, because I think throughout the whole conversation, you've peppered the talk with a lot of ideas or principles that you have, you know, you yourself have brought forth in your life. But if you have to pick one, you know, idea or principle that seems to have like the biggest impact on your life and the outcomes that have happened, what would that be? So what would be your mantra, Christine?
That's a good question. I think that my one principle I would live by is actually my first core value that I have at both my restaurants, in our employee handbook, is the first core value we have. And that is, be better today than you were yesterday. So it just means constant improvement. You know, regardless of what happens, like, can you be better today than you were yesterday in the things you do, the way you live your life, and the way you think?
Nice. And I think, this whole thing of always wanting to improve and push yourself forward, that's a great mantra for all of our listeners. So thank you so much for joining us today, Christine. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. And thank you, everyone, for listening in on today's podcast. We really hope you enjoyed our talk with Christine. And for more inspirational talks, stay tuned. We'll be back very soon with a new episode. So thank you, Christine.
You're welcome.